So just to give you a little insight on how it works to decide to break early, I actually refused to get out of my chair to follow Dr. Frist, who was up here, until we had a little bit bigger of a gap. But I do think he was really a great speaker and really set up what we're going to talk about today perfectly, and that is therapy adherence. What seems like really a very, very simple concept: take your medication as prescribed. It's actually written right on the bottle for you. All we have to do is have people follow that behavior, but it truly is one of the most complex human behaviors in the healthcare area. And as you all know and has heard in this concert, at this conference, it actually leads to a lot of waste in the system. So what I want to cover for you today is really three goals. The first thing is to talk about the waste associated with non-adherence and to really show you how it's different than some of the other waste we've talked about. The next thing I want to review is how we've evolved in our thinking. And as I show you how we've evolved in our thinking, I'll start to paint you a picture of what we think the final sort of the solution will look like and what we will need to do as a group to really get our patients to take their medications as prescribed. So that's what we'll sort of do over the next 30 minutes or so. Now, you've seen this slide before. It's been in just about everybody's presentation. I think the key theme here is there is a lot of waste in the system from three simple behaviors: not using the right medication, so using a brand when less expensive medication is appropriate, not using the right channel, and not taking your medication as prescribed. But not all this waste is equal, and it's actually a little bit different. So I want to look at this in a little bit more detail. If you went to Adam Kautzner's presentation yesterday on drug mix, he told you all about the tools we have that we can put in place, like step therapy and now select step therapy, to really move patients to the right medications. And what that means is instead of paying $100 for a medication, you're only paying $20, and you get a savings in terms of drug costs, and that savings is immediate for you and for your members. If you went to Jake Cedergreen's presentation yesterday on the channel, he explained how we could move you to a different, a more narrow network and save you money that way, or also move you to home delivery and save money. And in both of those cases, you're using a less expensive channel and you get savings in terms of drug costs. And those drug cost savings go sort of directly to the bottom line. You can achieve those things immediately. When we talk about the waste associated with adherence, it's a little bit different. So if we got everybody to actually start taking their medications right now, what would happen to your drug costs? Would they go down like the other two examples? No, right? Your drug costs would go up. But what you would expect to see is if you focus on the right classes, if you really improve adherence in the right areas, you can expect to see a decrease in the number of events. By a decrease in the number of events, I mean a decrease in hospitalizations, a decrease in physician office visits, emergency room visits. So this is really how the waste associated with adherence is different than the other waste that we've talked about at this conference. It takes a little bit longer for us to really achieve those goals. Now, really, where does the waste exist? The waste really truly exists everywhere. The adherence waste per capita across the United States is, if you think back to the slide of the United States that Dr. Miller showed yesterday on sort of obesity and then on diabetes, you'll see we see similar patterns here. It's that sort of lower southeast area where we see a lot of waste due to adherence. And even though it's sort of concentrated there, it really truly is a national issue, and we do see a lot of waste due to adherence in just about every state. Now, I gave a talk actually a couple of weeks ago in the state of Ohio, and they did point out to me, and we had a discussion on the fact that they are the right now the sort of the lightest state with the least amount of waste on there. So I did tell them I would mention that from the main stage and give them a nod for the great work that they are doing. So the question, and this actually came up yesterday, is how can we tell if people are taking their medication? Okay? And what we do is we use a calculation called the medication possession ratio. What the medication possession ratio is, it's the number of days of pills supplied divided by the number of days measured. And I'll walk you through some examples because it's very important that you get this, because this is really what we use to determine whether our interventions are successful or not. So what happens is somebody starts on a medication, and typically we have to wait about 270 days or up to a year to determine what their medication possession ratio is. And in this case, this gentleman hits the 270-day mark, and what we then do is we look in the background and we say, okay, What fills did they get and for what day supply? And in this case, they got 9 fills of 30-day medications, 9 times 30, 270 days of pills divided by the number of days measured. That gives you 100% NPR. Okay, that's sort of the highest limit that you can get in terms of a medication possession ratio. Let's look at one other example. And in this case, let's say the person missed one fill, and it's represented here as one just coming out. Typically, we don't see it sort of come across in this pattern. What we see is they sort of are 35 days late filling their drug 1 month, 37 days late, and it ends up having a gap in therapy. But let's say in this case, they only filled it 8 times. 8 times 30-day supply is 240 pills divided by 270 gives you that 89% medication possession ratio. Okay, now let's say we have somebody who is really bad at taking their medication, and I'd like to say that this is rare, but this is actually more common than I'd like to say it is. But let's say they only fill their medication 5 times, times 30 days supply, you end up getting 150 days of pills divided by 270, you end up with an NPR of 55. Now, the sort of gold standard that's out there that we set is if your NPR is over 80%, we call you adherent to your medication. Okay. Now, this isn't a number that we actually came up with or that reference value. It's actually what the FDA uses in the clinical trials to be able to say somebody's adherent or not. So typically, this is the way we say when somebody's adherent or not, is we calculate an NPR, and they have to have an NPR over 80% for us to say someone's adherent. Now, how big is this problem of poor adherence? What you see here, graphed here, is the 3 key diseases that we really focus on for trying to improve adherence: cardiovascular disease, high cholesterol, and diabetes. And what you see graphed is the percent of patients who have an NPR greater than 80%. Now, I've always wanted to do this exercise since my organic chemistry teacher did this to me. So I want everybody to look to the person to your left. Okay. Now look to the person to your right. Okay. Based on these numbers and what we see, one of the 3 of you aren't taking your medications as prescribed. Now, my organic chemistry teacher used it to describe that one of us wouldn't be in the class or passing at the end of it, but that's fine. I like the example. It got the point across. So, that's how big the problem is. A third of the patients in some of these key disease states are not taking the medication as prescribed. Now, the question we get a lot is, well, that may make sense for cardiovascular disease and high cholesterol, sort of the silent killers, right? You don't know you have the disease and you don't feel bad a lot of the times. But even if we look at some very serious conditions, like multiple sclerosis on the specialty side, we still see adherence rates around the 72% mark. So really, it's a problem that goes truly beyond just the traditional side of the pharmacy and gets into the specialty medication. It truly is a serious problem that we have to solve. Now, what are we doing to solve this problem? It's what Larry talked about at the very beginning. What really stands between the doctor's orders and optimal outcomes is consumer behavior. You heard Dr. Frist talk about this, right? And the behavior is 40% of the equation in trying to solve some of our healthcare problems that we have right now. And that is exactly where we are focused. We truly believe that that advanced understanding of consumer behavior is going to enable us to solve this problem along with your help. So what I wanted to do now is sort of walk you through how we've evolved in our thinking. Where did we start at for trying to say, here's what we need to do to solve adherence and here's where we're going. And I'll actually show you where we ended up and where we're at today. Today we're at, or we moved from really member education, identifying somebody who's non-compliant, sending them a letter, having them talk to a pharmacist, and we've really evolved that over the last 3 years to be into predictive modeling and a multifaceted approach. Now, I think the saying says it's not about the destination, but it's about the journey. And what I want to walk you through now is, what are the studies that we've conducted? What are the pilots that you've all participated in that has really guided our current strategies in trying to solve this problem? And to give you a number of these, we have around 23 studies that we either have conducted or are conducting to try to really get at and understand what's going on. And it really all starts with one piece of the puzzle, and that is all of you. We have a large number of clients that work with us, who help us test and learn, who partner with us in pilot. When I was a resident at the VA Medical Center, I was happy to get 25 patients enrolled in my research study that I was doing. Here, in working with you, we're able to get access to, in one of our studies, 35,000 non-compliant patients. And that is really a great thing. So we do want to say thank you for all of you. Now, I also have an ask on this, is that if you didn't see your name on this list, we're using a little social norming here, and you'd like to see your name on this list next year, please visit us at the exhibit and sign up for one of our pilots, because we still have a lot of work we need to do in this area. So whenever we get ready to sort of embark on an endeavor, similar to what Dr. Nice said yesterday, we don't usually get there in one giant step. We take a lot of small steps. And in the research area, we end up coming up with a series of hypotheses or questions that we ask. And then we try to prove those hypotheses or disprove them. And that guides us to our future research. So the first really hypothesis we had, and I still remember it when Dr. Nice came into my office and said, you know, Brian, I know you're really tied to that letter you send out for member education, and I read all three pages of it, and it was in 10-point font, and it looked like it was written by a pharmacist, and I really enjoyed reading that, but I think we could do more with the way we communicate with members. We can send the same letter out, or we can send a letter out, we can target patients the same way, but we can use different words and try to get a better impact, a more of an impact in that letter, and so that's what we did. And we came up with six different options that we ended up testing. Like most of our research, we have to have a control group. That's sort of the gold standard for us. We like to know what happens normally in a population, so then we can compare what real effect that intervention has on that. And so we came up with a few different ideas. We came up with adherence tips. I will tell you, we started calling people and leaving poems on their answering machines. We quickly shut that off based on the feedback. I thought they were well-written poems, but we tried it and got negative feedback on it. I think they were a little creeped out by the poems, but that's fine. We, like I said, we test and learn a lot here. But we also tried other things like social norming. So we put a pill bottle up and we said, here's where you're at and you're not taking your medication. Everybody else is doing better than you. And again, we didn't word it exactly like that. But we tried also using authority letters, reminder sticker mailing, similar to the Mr. Yuck stickers, right? That everybody remembers for poison control. Put this sticker somewhere and it'll remind you to take your medication. The winner that ended up winning was the authority and loss aversion letter. Now, this is the one that hurt my ego the most. Because we had a conversation where they said, Brian, I know you think pharmacists are the most trusted professions. You tell us this all the time, but we'd like to take the pharmacist off of signing the letters and have a physician signing it. Now, after me telling them this wasn't going to work for about 15 minutes and really showing them the Gallup polls and everything else about pharmacists being most trusted, we said, okay, let's take that off and let's put a physician on there to sign it. The other thing we had done is all of our previous letters talked about the benefits. Here's what you could do to benefit if you take your medication. And we reframed the letter to talk about what the member could lose. It's called loss aversion. Losses tend to loom larger than gains and mean more to us. So we reframed our communications up, and that's what we ended up seeing being the biggest impact, was a combination of authority and loss aversion. So if you are in our letter-based program today, this is the letter that we used. As soon as we get these results, we incorporate it in, and this was sort of the first improvement we made to trying to solve this. So yes, it had a big, or it had an impact, but when you look at the impact, it impacted a segment of the population. We saw a lift, but it didn't get us to where we needed to be, okay? A step in the right direction, one step on that campaign. Then we came up with the next one, which is, do copays matter? There was a lot of talk at the time about value-based insurance design, or if you take very serious conditions and sort of send a price signal to a member and tell them you're not going to pay for these drugs, so waive the copays in these classes, the idea is, does that increase your adherence with the medication? And so we studied this. And we studied this with a natural experiment with a drug called Zocor that went available generically. Now, when a drug goes from brand to generic, members' copays typically go down because they start paying that generic copay. So we studied this over time, and we sort of saw what that decrease in copay did to adherence rates. And what we found is dropping those copays did improve adherence rates, but it didn't get us exactly where we needed to be. And the question we still have on this works for a subset of the population. It's absolutely the case that certain people can't afford their medications, and giving them medications or waiving copays it helps them take it. But at the same time, you're usually taking 70% of the population who's taking their medication and waiving all their copays also. So we still struggle a little bit with this in terms of the benefits versus the losses associated with this approach. But it does work, but probably not for everybody. So when you look at it, it did have an impact, but it was on the lower side of the scale. The next thing we looked at was, does channel matters? Does using different pharmacies, primarily our home delivery pharmacy or our specialty pharmacy, make a difference in terms of medication possession ratios? And so we do what we always do, and we did a study on it. This was published in the Journal of Medical Economics. And what we did is we took two groups of patients who were in retail, and they had an average medication possession ratio of 70%, and we followed them forward over time. One group stayed in retail. That group that stayed in retail saw their medication possession ratios go from 70 to 63. Those patients that moved to home delivery saw their medication possession ratios rise to over 85%. By far and away, this is the best intervention that we've created for increasing medication possession ratios. By far and away, more than sending a letter that you saw, more than waiving copays, this is the one intervention that increases medication possession ratios the most. And we started talking about why this was the case. And what we found in our research is that a lot of people drop off their prescriptions or have problems refilling their prescriptions. So we've got a group of people that do really good when they have pills in their bottle, okay? And I do good for the first 25 days of therapy, and then I look at my bottle and I say, boy, I have 5 pills left. I take one, I'm gonna have to refill it, but I'll go ahead and refill it tomorrow. I get down to 3, I'll refill it, but I'll refill it tomorrow. And members get in this cycle of procrastination. Well, in the home delivery channel, you only have 4 opportunities to do that versus a retail channel where you have 12 opportunities. And we think that's one of the key drivers for really the increase we see from a home delivery perspective, is you have less opportunities to actually drop off when it's time to refill your medication. We looked at this also in the specialty area. So we looked at 2 different studies in the specialty area. The first study we did compared patients who were on those high-cost specialty medications who were in a retail environment, and we compared them with patients who were using CuraScript, our specialty pharmacy. Now, if you went to the specialty sessions yesterday, you know our specialty pharmacy offers a high-touch environment. We offer social work help. We offer clinical consultation. We have an extra level of service on that. And what we found is that in the retail environment, we saw MPRs in key categories be about 65%. When we looked at the MPRs, and again, in a controlled trial, in patients who were using CuraScript, we saw MPRs go up anywhere from 8 to 10%. So again, a significant increase in those ratios in patients who use our specialty pharmacy. But we had another question that came out about this. When patients use our specialty pharmacy, we offer them to enroll them in CareLogic programs. This is an extra level of clinical support. This is, you talk to a nurse before you start therapy. You have access to, everybody has access to a pharmacist, but we're more proactive with our interventions from both our nurses or pharmacists. We know when you're likely to drop off therapy and we intervene with you proactively, but not everybody is enrolled in those programs. Some members say, no, I don't want to talk to the nurses. What we found is with those patients who were enrolled in those clinical programs, those CareLogic programs, we saw medication possession ratios go up another 6 to 7%. So truly, again, just like the home delivery side, we really think the channel here is very, very important in getting patients to take their medications. And not only getting them to the right channel, but actually engaging them in those clinical conversations, especially when it comes to these specialty medications. So overall, channel matters. Yes, the impact was moderate. There's still a little bit of room for improvement, so we're not going to give it really necessarily high unless it's going to get all the way there, but it gets us a little bit closer. The next thing we looked at was devices. I can honestly say I get almost one unsolicited email a week from somebody trying to pitch us on a device, whether it's a GlowCap, a DoseAlert, a Didit. The more recent one is one that's actually a microchip that you glue onto a pill. And when you swallow it, the stomach acid establishes a connection and it sends out something. That right now is a little bit too big brother for us to test, but I'm not saying we won't ever do it. But right now it's not on our list. So really, devices matter, and this is what we wanted to test. And like I said, we've tested a lot of these, and I just want to show you the results from one of our studies. And this was a study we did on dose alerts. Dose alerts are little timer-like devices. You can actually see a picture of them if you go out to the exhibit. And they have a very complicated mechanism on the back of them called sticky tape. And you take the sticky tape off, and you stick it to the top of the bottle, and you hit the timer. And it starts at 24 hours, and it counts down to zero, and then it beeps. The idea is you hit the button, you're alerted to it, you take your medication, and when you hit that button, it starts that timer off at 24 again, and it starts coming down. It's a very simple device. It's a very simple intervention. It's not connected to anything. If you were on the lab tour and saw the glow caps, it's not sending us signals or anything. It's strictly a timer device. And what we saw is that it did have an impact. Whenever we provided these timers or these dose alerts to patients, we did see an increase in medication possession ratio. The other interesting thing, and it'll tease up some of our future conversations, we find that certain segments of the population or certain groups really respond to the devices. So it's not everybody who this works for, but there's a certain segment where this really starts to work for a patient and really starts to help them out. I am probably the segment that can benefit from this. Because no more education for me. You know, I went to pharmacy school, did a residency, worked for the last 10 to 12 years. I get the value of medications, but every time I go on an antibiotic, and my whole family goes on them at the same time when we have strep throat come to our house, is my wife and kids finish, and I have about 5 or 6 pills left in my bottle. And it's not because I don't you know, value it. It's not because I don't understand that I should really take it. It's because I don't remember to take it. In that case, I'm probably somebody who can really benefit from an intervention like this. So devices matter, yes. The impact is moderate when you focus it on the right segment of the population. Now, it's at this point that we all sort of took a step back and said, okay, let's assess where we're at in this equation. So again, we're on a campaign. We're about halfway through the campaign, and let's say, what do we know today, and what are the problems? Most of our interventions that we've talked about so far, the dose alerts, the letters, all rely on us looking backwards at claims history to identify whether you're non-compliant or not, right? I've waited that 270 days and said, this person is now non-compliant. The problem with that is you've already established the bad behavior. You've already gotten into the habit of taking your medications. You've already established that. It is very hard, as some of you know, to correct behavior once it's been established in you. So we really said we've got to get away from this. We've got to find a different way where we cannot look at the past, but we can start to assess people in real time to determine whether they're not going to take their medication or not. The other thing we came up with is we're not going to find that silver bullet. I'm pretty convinced of this now. I wish I was standing up here and I'd hold up some crazy looking device and say, this is it. This is what's going to cause you. We're pretty sure that's not going to happen right now. We're going to have a multifaceted approach. We're going to have to get the right interventions to the right members to get them to take their medications. The other thing we started talking about, and this was the time when we started to do the intent to behavior work, is we started to talk about whether patients understand that they're non-compliant with their medication. And so we started looking at, do their perceptions matter? Do people realize that they're not taking their medication as prescribed? And so we did a study. What I will tell you is this is very early results from this study. It actually didn't make it into your drug trend report. We've got a lot more analysis to do on it to draw some conclusions, but I do think it's very, very interesting. So we talked to members, and if you remember, I have access to all our members' claims history. So I looked at their claims history, I calculated what their medication possession ratios were, and then we had a discussion with a member and had them give us how they thought they were doing at taking their medication. Okay? So if the member's actual medication possession ratios were over 80%, their perceptions and their actual values were pretty well aligned. The members thought they were taking their medication, and they were taking their medication. But look what happens when the actual MPR drops between 40 and 80. People still think they're taking their medication. At least that's what they told us. And even when you drop it down to have it an MPR of less than 40%, the perception is they're still taking their medication. And I think early on in this analysis, where we're sort of at is, how can we count on people to correct or really self-correct these behaviors if they're not perceiving that they have an actual problem? So we've got a lot more work to do on this one, but it really brings up a dilemma that we have, in that you can't rely on claims history because you've established, because they've already established the behavior. And we struggle with talking to patients because they may not perceive that they have a problem taking their medication. And so right now, perception, it does matter, and the impact is moderate. This could actually go into the high category once we sort of get in and start to understand the results. So where this left us is saying we've got to have a different way to identify whether people are not taking their medication, and that leads us to predictive modeling. We mentioned this a little bit last year, but wanted to do a little bit more in-depth dive to sort of explain what we are doing. And what we are doing is taking access, or getting access, we have access to all sorts of information, whether that's demographic information on members, RX history, also past behaviors, and we're putting them all together and we're building these models, proprietary models, and ended up coming up with something called the Express Scripts Adherence Index. Now, the way I think about this is, think of this similar to a credit score, what your bank does for you. So it's time for you to do a loan, your bank's going to, or you have a credit score where they look at all your past, whether you've paid your credit cards on time, what your debt is, and they evaluate it and they give you a credit card score. And then that credit score is used to determine whether a bank is going to give you a loan, or how big that loan is going to be, or how much confidence they have. And that's similar what we're doing with the Express Scripts Adherence Index. We're creating a factor to ultimately tell us whether you're going to be, that we're predicting whether you're going to be adherent with your medication in the future. And I'll just show you a little bit of how this works. So what you see here is the three classes that we have the big focus on: high cholesterol, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. And if we were to say, let's take the low end of the model. So let's take the low end of the model where the model is saying these people aren't going to take their medication. And what you see here is that lowest group here really doesn't take their medication. The fraction of patients' adherence over the next 12 months in that lowest group is really poor. And that's a good thing. Not a good thing that they're not taking their medication, but the model is performing how we want it to. On the high end, if we take the highest Express Scripts Adherence Index, you see up here that we can say with certainty, in certain cases, that people will be taking their medication as prescribed. What this allows us to do is this starts to allow us to predict and really start to structure our interventions based on where you fall with that adherence index. So if you're at the highest adherence index, it probably doesn't make sense for me to intervene on you, right? Because we're predicting you're going to take your medication. On the other side, if you're a little bit lower and we predict you're going to have problems, then that allows us to start to say, okay, this is somebody who we need to focus on. The other thing that's happened over the last 6 months is we're starting to identify that the model can tell us more than just predicting behaviors, but the model can start to tell us what intervention will work with members. And I'll walk you through an example here. What you see here on the left is the percentage of adherence patients post-intervention, and on the bottom is the Express Scripts Adherence Index. So that straight line says, okay, if you're in the upper right-hand corner and hit on that line, that means you're going to take your medication. And what we try to do is create interventions to raise that line up. What we're starting to find is if we send letters out, it really works in this segment of the population. It really works for this sort of range of adherence index. Now, if we send devices out, it works for a different subset of the population. There's some crossover there, but it really works for a different segment. And then if you get further near the bottom of this and we're really predicting that you're not going to take your medication, there's going to have to be other things we try here. It may be having you talk to a pharmacist. It may be other interventions that are a little bit more in-depth, that are a little bit more expensive to really get you to value it. And this is where we think we have to get to and where we're going to solve the adherence problems, is not just predicting whether you're going to take your medication in the future, but saying, okay, here's what your adherence index is. You need a letter. Here's what your adherence index is. You need a device. Again, it's different. Different people need different interventions to help them take their medications. And if you're at the end of this, we need to come up with some other intervention. And this is what we're currently studying. So this ultimately is what the final adherence solution will look like. We will predict whether members will take their medication as prescribed, and we will intervene on them with a tailored, individualized intervention. okay? And this is very, very exciting for us now. So really, it's the right program for the right patient at the right time. That's sort of our summary of what we think we'll have to do to solve this problem. So does prediction matter? Yes. Is the impact, it's high. It's one of the biggest things we've learned is we can't do one size fits all, and we can accurately predict adherence. And so that really gives us to our 2011 strategies of predictive modeling and a multifaceted approach. Now, I want to highlight some of the pilots we have going on right now, and there's one I'm particularly excited about, and that is TAPO. We call it TAPO, Therapy Adherence Proactive Outreach, because what this is doing is this is a pilot that is starting to operationalize what we just talked about. And so what we're doing is we're targeting high-risk patients for outreach. We're determining the likely barrier to adherence. So we reach out with automated telephone calls, have them answer a series of questions, and determine their likely reason for not taking their medication. Then we intervene, not across the population, but at an individual level, at an individual member level. They get a targeted, tailored intervention straight for them. And then what we're doing is we're using the models to evaluate the performance of the interventions. So if you think about it, we sort of have to teach the model. We've got to give it all this data, and we've got to let it grow so that we can get very accurate in not only predicting, but getting the right interventions. And so I thought about creating a nice flow chart and a decision tree to sort of show everybody how this works. But what I ended up doing is we took pictures of sort of the dialogue boxes that sit along a lot of our cubicles on how this is working. So don't worry about what it says here. You'll see some numbers that were early on. But what I will tell you is it's very complicated. In certain cases, we're giving people a pill box. We've identified that their problem is forgetting or they're having trouble organizing it. They get a pill box. Other people have trouble with refill reminders. We're moving them to home delivery. If you're already in home delivery and you're having trouble with your refills, we may get you enrolled in our auto refill program. Other patients, like I said, would talk to a pharmacist, send a device out. So it really is a complicated algorithm, and we're very excited about it. And we're actually on, I think, the fourth iteration of our TAPO pilot right now, and we expect that we're going to have multiple iterations of this even more as we sort of tweak the intervention. So we're very, very excited about this. And it is something that I think you will see roll out from Express Scripts later on this year. And it's something where we're going to come to you with a solution. We're going to tell you, we're going to predict whether people are adherent or not, but I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly what the interventions are. A lot of you ask us, how many letters are you going to send? How many people you will reach out to? What I'll be able to tell you is we will predict adherence, and they will either talk to a pharmacist, they will get sent a letter, they will get sent a device, but we'll sort of show you the interventions, but we will let the model dictate what ultimately happens with those patients, and we're very excited about this. Now, we don't just stop at this. We have to continue to test and learn. We need to continue to identify other things to sort of add to that, to our current strategies. And so we have other pilots going on around adherence aids. We're doing more stuff with text messaging around adherence, right? Everybody here has a smartphone, or most of you probably have smartphones. There's things we think we can do to get more access to members through that sort of technology. And again, if you go out to the exhibit, you can see some of that stuff. We're doing additional testing with letters around social norming that we tried before, but we're taking a different approach. Instead of showing patients on a pill bottle how they're doing, we're making it more simplified and giving them frowny faces and smiley faces. We're thinking that simplicity is really what's going to be necessary. And the last thing that I'll mention is we're doing a lot of work with physicians too. Now, you heard Dr. Christakis talk yesterday about social networks, right? We're actually doing work with Dr. Christakis right now. And so we have a program that we offer, that we operate, called academic detailing. What happens with academic detailing is we send pharmacists out into the community to intervene with physicians. Typically, we target the high prescribers. That's how we figure out who we're going to target. Who's sending the most drugs? Who's writing the most drugs? Send somebody out to talk to that physician, and we can educate them on adherence, on generics, on home delivery. We're working with two of our health plans now, and Dr. Christakis and his company is actually mapping the physician community for those health plans. And what we're starting to find is we may be focusing on the right physician or on the wrong physicians. That instead of focusing on the high prescribers, they're actually sitting in certain cases at the outside of that network. We may want to focus on instead prescribers in the middle of that network that have a lot of influence. So that's one way in where we're sort of taking Dr. Christakis's work and really putting it into effect with some of our health plans to try to improve our targeting. And we're going to do this on generics and on adherence and on home delivery, because we think it's a unique way to really improve our interaction with physicians. So finally, sort of to round out what we are doing on adherence, there's a few, I guess I would call them takeaways. What I'd ask is understand your numbers. If I won't do the show of hands because we're late or on the second day and almost done here, but most of you probably know what your generic fill rates are, right? It's top of your mind. You probably know what your home delivery penetration is. Do you know what your medication possession ratios are for your key classes? Most people don't have those at the top of mind. And so I'd like to ask you to start to look at those as sort of key metrics or key measures, because it is something that is very important. The next thing is to continue to help us test and learn. We have a lot more steps to take in our campaign to ultimately find that ultimate solution to solve this, but we're making good progress. We just need to continue on down the path, and we need to really ask all of you to continue to work with us. And finally, take the next step here. If you look at your population and you see that they are having trouble with paying for their medications, then look at the copays. If you think education works, or if you want to start doing something, enroll in one of our education programs. So we can actually have programs to offer you now, but get started on it and then get ready to act on the ultimate solution. We do truly believe that really an advanced understanding of human behavior, and again, I don't think I really need to see this or say this. Dr. Frist said this, I think, good enough. Behavior accounts for that 40%, that 40% in terms of ultimate outcomes. And what we need to do is continue to understand it. And this is really the commitment you have, not only for me, but really everybody up here at the front of the room, is to continue to advance our learning in this area and really take that advanced understanding to help solve the problem of non-adherence. So thank you very much. And I will go ahead and I think open it up for some questions.